Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome to Ask the Expert North Texas here on News Radio 1080 KRLD. Thanks for staying with us. I'm David Rankin.
And I'm Kristen Diaz. And this afternoon, we have Dr. Ken Jones, Administrator of Texas Health Behavioral Health Center in Arlington, this afternoon, joining us on the KRLD Afternoon News. And, you know, Dr. Jones, we were just talking off air for this. You know, this is a conversation, unfortunately, that continues with mental health experts like yourself. The conversation of, you know, how do we address these mass shootings that happen in society? How do we talk? How do we start the conversation about them? And there's so many different angles, right? How do you talk to your kids about it? How do you talk to your friends about it if you're, you know, as adults? And ultimately, you know, administrators and staff, how do you have the conversation of mental health in your workplace? So let's just start in one particular area. You know, the conversation of mental health has grown over the past couple of years during the pandemic. But when we talk about mass shootings, like what we've seen, even in the past 10 days, we've had three school shootings that we've, you know, reported on, even here locally.
Sure.
What is the conversation now turning into when we do open up? Are we seeing more people addressing the issue or just kind of talking around it?
Yeah, I think that there is some encouraging movement in terms of people reaching out for help. So I do think we are in a process of destigmatizing what it means to actually reach out for psychological help. So from one standpoint, I think that that's a benefit and a trend that we hope continues. But on the other hand, we, like you said, we have these conversations following tragic, unspeakable events that continue to happen. And so that takes on a little bit of a different angle, because we have now a wide range of events over a period of time with which to look at with an aggregate lens. And each one has a different story, but we see that there are common themes. And I guess my overall concern has to do with our young people and our students. You know, it's impossible to create a true environment of learning while refusing to take meaningful steps to safeguard basic physical and psychological safety. And the frustration is that we don't seem to see those meaningful steps taken. And for the student who gets off the bus in the morning and goes into the classroom, that has an impact. So that's deeply troubling that the adults in the room, if you will, seem unable to come together and find meaningful solutions to create the kind of safety that our children deserve.
Studies come out saying we've seen 10 mass shootings since Friday in this country. And as Kristen said, we've seen three school shootings, two of them here in North Texas,
right,
over the last couple of weeks or so. The phrase mass shooting, have we become desensitized to it?
You know, I think we have, because it does seem like a rather, it doesn't personalize that these are actual lives that are lost, and the terror that is associated with hearing that alarm in the school and this time it's not a drill, is incredibly, incredibly frightening, you know, for our kids in that particular environment. It's frightening for the surrounding schools And to the extent that children across the nation are exposed to the story and they hear the details and they go, well, that sounds a little bit like someone at my school, or that's actually something that I can connect with as far as that actually could happen at my school as well. It has a cascading impact. And so that is a serious concern.
I'm very curious on your take on this. Something, as somebody in media, someone who grew up watching Spanish language media, for example,
sure,
and now I'm in English media, we treat, and I'm talking about the media, we treat the in two different worlds, that we push that envelope a little bit more in Spanish media, where we might show something that's a little bit more violent or graphic, mm-hmm, than in English media.
Right.
One thing that kind of took me by surprise this week was the amount of video footage, the body cam footage from the police officers,
yeah,
from the mass shooting in Tennessee.
Right.
The generation of school-aged kids right now, they are glued to their social media accounts.
Right.
Some, yes, of these videos were being posted without any warning. What kind of psychological effect does that have on kids who can easily access these videos of these mass shootings that are not video games? They are not movies. This is real,
sure,
life.
It's real. Right. Yeah. I think it's a significant and detrimental effect. The final toll of which I don't know that we're fully aware of right now. But I'll be candid. I do find it somewhat irresponsible. The extent and graphic nature of the media coverage of these events, I don't think it's societally helpful. And even in discussing this interview, you know, the question was like, you know, have you seen the body cam video? And my answer was like, no, I don't watch those types of things. And I'll explain that. You know, I don't see significant value in creating or in limiting the psychological distance that we get from the details of an event. You know, 50 years ago, you know, these things were transmitted in very different ways, and we read the words and we could still emotionally feel that pain. But, you know, I think of it this way. If I was asked in the immediate aftermath of an event like this, would I like to ride along with the police while they go find the shooter? I would decline and say, I will certainly pray for you, but I'll wait over here. I would not go along on that particular mission. I'm not trained in that manner. So why would I want to watch the body cam footage as if I'm actually going on that high stress of an event? And I'm a grown adult, so I would suggest that our children deserve some psychological protection from being that up close and personal to that kind of a traumatic event in the name of its news. And we need to know. I don't necessarily subscribe to that level of access for our brains, and especially for the minds of our children. I think it just creates unnecessary levels of terror. And I don't think it's psychologically healthy for our kids.
Of course, with these kids being all 9 years of age and under, parents all over then have to have a really, really tough discussion with their own children of that age, where it's almost they've started to lose their innocence because they have to have these shooter drills in,
yes,
school.
Yes.
The possibility. How does a parent talk to a child about this without that child being afraid to go to school?
So I still think it's worth the fight on the part of parents to limit the exposure to the images of these types of events. I still think it's worth making an effort to limit that to the extent possible. I know it's very difficult in this day of the sharing of viral clips, but I would still want to try to make that effort to limit that exposure, because we're trying to use words to mitigate the impact of images. And that's a one down battle right from the beginning, right? So saying that up front, I think trying to limit that access is important. But to your bigger question of how do we have the conversation, I think the most important thing is that we do have the conversation, right? I think as adults, there's a weight of this as Americans, that this is the country we live in. This is the society that we're part of. And that sense of hopelessness or helplessness or both, that we don't seem to be able to protect our kids when they leave us in the morning and we pack the lunch and they go to school and we pray and we go, it seems like there ought to be more that we can do than thoughts and prayers over and over again. And so that feels debilitating to us as adults. And sometimes I think that creates a bit of a silent pocket where we're dealing with our own sense of guilt and shame and helplessness. And perhaps that conversation at the dinner table doesn't take place. And so I think it's important to recognize we need to step out of our own kind of adult responses to that and reach out and go like, hey, I know you heard about what happened today. Want to take a couple minutes and talk about that. How does that make you feel when you hear about those types of things? And when you go to school, do you think about those types of fears, or do you have anyone at school that you're worried about? Yeah. And try to elicit those responses from them. If they do begin to experience any concerning symptoms, sleep disturbance, or concerns as far as lack of appetite and those sorts of things, we want to be cued into those changes so that we can respond appropriately and, if necessary, get them the help that that they need.
We talk a little bit about kids specifically, but those kids will end up being adults, right? And there's that inner child in every adult.
Yeah.
The teaching profession is going through a really hard time right now. It's hard to obtain teachers. You know, a lot of them have retired. A lot of them are saying, I don't get paid enough to do this, you know, because it's not just teaching anymore. There's so many other responsibilities, including protecting kids from mass shootings, which could happen anywhere at any time.
Sure.
How do adults address that inner child that they have that's also scared? Because if we don't deal with these traumas as children, they fester, right? Until we are adults.
Right. No, that's a great question, Kristen. And I think part of the key is there is something healing in taking meaningful action. And that is different for each individual, but I think the point is still, what can I do to be on the solution side of this and not just passively on the, wow, this is really terrible, I don't know what to do side. So taking meaningful action actually has its own healing properties for us. And so whatever that looks like, I guess I'll start with what it doesn't look like. And that's jumping onto your social media, into your normal echo chamber, and venting about how awful this is or making it, you know, completely political, because that doesn't change the world. That doesn't change our society. No one goes to your social media and goes like, that's a brand new thought. I hadn't considered that. Let me change my position. Like, that's fantasy. It does feel good and cathartic to get out and vent, but it actually doesn't make us feel like we're part of a solution. So finding meaningful ways to contribute, that may be politically. That may be joining a cause and saying, I'm going to add my voice until it becomes a chorus, until the chorus becomes, you know, the impetus for change. It may be trying to find ways to directly provide comfort to those who are grieving in that situation. And so there's ways to get in touch, to donate money, to find ways to actually try to meaningfully reach the ground level there in Tennessee and make your presence felt that way. So finding meaningful ways to contribute to the solution side of this, I think, has positive effects for both the individual and obviously for our larger society, because I think that's what we need. We haven't reached critical mass yet, and I don't know where that is, but we haven't reached that tipping point where we've seen our society actually begin to make changes. And hopefully it's soon. I hope it's now, but we've seen so many of these that it's kind of easy to get jaded. But I think we need to keep that hope that we're at some point going to go, we're going to move together as a unit and make the kind of changes that actually result in safer environments for our children.
My last question deals with the fact that it's important for adults to find other adults to talk to. Not necessarily professionals. If they can find a professional, great. But how important is it for us as a society to find other adults, friends, relatives, to have these kinds of conversations just to alleviate these any kind of negative thoughts that one might have about situations like what happened in Nashville?
Sure. No, Dave, I think it's really important. And so it may be, you know, for those who have school age kids, and it may be reaching out and talking to parents in your group. But I would still suggest, though, that that connection is kind of a simple catharsis. I don't know that we actually hang up the phone and go like, well, that actually helps me sleep better. I think the bigger answer is perhaps having the conversation and then those two individuals uniting and going, what can we do? Right. So that may be reaching out to your school board and the reality of going, let's talk about the drills that are done. Let's talk about inviting your local police department to come and speak. What can we do in our local school district to harden, you know, the areas in which our children are educated? So from micro to macro, there's all kinds of opportunities to become involved. So if you do reach out, choose to reach out to another adult and have that conversation, I think that's fantastic. But can we move that conversation into an action that actually helps us feel like we're contributing on the positive side of the ledger?
That is Dr. Ken Jones, administrator of Texas Health Behavioral Health Center in Arlington, joining us here on the KRLD Afternoon News. Thank you so much for your insight and your time. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.